B-Pod Studios.
Toucher and Rich, weekday morning, 6 to 10.
That was horribly uncomfortable.
Toucher and Rich, mornings.
It was all taken out of context.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
A couple of thoughts here. Number one, I think that when you're assessing Tom Brady, I think in a situation like this, if he's going to go play for another team, which is possible, I think it's going to be a team that all of a sudden comes out of nowhere like you didn't even see coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's number one.
For example.
You can't see it coming.
There's nothing better. There's no greater luxury than having Adam Schefter sitting in the room.
And then the other part to this is it's not just a Tom Brady football decision. Like, it's his family, too.
Yeah.
I always think, is his wife going to be happy in Indianapolis? Mm-hmm. Is his wife going to be happy in Los Angeles? If we put those two cities together, which do you think she'd be more happy in?
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich.
Two things in that clip real quick. First of all, I do love the emergence of mystery team. Second of all, man, Schefter's a robot. Like, Schefter was like, I'm saying words, and everyone kind of starts laughing. It's like, and you're just kind of sitting there looking at him. Can I now finish my words in which I was going to speak?
He makes more money than you think he would.
Well, of course
By the way,
does.
I need my computer back. I need a lot of things at the station. All right. Bert Breer is here from MMQB, where he's a big hotshot. And Josh McDaniels, who I think is a coward in his professional career. And no, I do. I truly do. I think that he's one of these guys, and I see it in radio. They refuse to leave a market, mm-hmm. and then they get, I think John knows one who very well, and they get kicked around, and they keep making less money.
We're gonna go in the closet, pull some skeletons out.
Didn't realize we were going in this direction, but sure.
I'm not talking about you.
No, I understand. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yes. Dale Arnold.
Yes.
And so, like, you won't leave.
That was the... Yes.
We really had to twist your arm.
Well, there's really only one John Wallach nemesis. Like, everyone gets along with John. Yeah. It's, like, weird.
It's really hard not to get along with John.
Yeah. I wonder, because he's told me some of the stuff that, like, Dale has said and done to him, and I'm like, all right, that sounds kind of like a dick move, but not really as for you. You to hate him. Like, nobody hates John, and nobody doesn't get along with John except for Dale Arnold. No. And I remember, I'm wondering,
like, Ben Flanders.
Yes. Are there like one or two things that have happened that
compared to, by the way, that
you will not tell us about? Like, were there incidents that were just like, oh, no, sweet no, Lord, that's evil?
There's more people that hated
it. It's not just me.
And there's more people that hated John over there and that John hates. That threw fits.
Well, okay.
Well, you're not the only one at this station that has Dale Arnold as a nemesis.
That's correct.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now, I understand. Yeah,
I had to have dinner with the guy one time. It was very uncomfortable. Yeah, all right,
you would call him a nemesis.
But anyway, so I believe it in any profession is that if there's limited opportunities and you refuse to take them, that eventually that people are just going to look at you as a pussy that doesn't have the mental fortitude to actually go and take on a new challenge.
And it seems like the NFL is leaning in that direction now, this year.
Yes, because they're not even bothering to talk to him. So McDaniels is talking to Cleveland today, I guess, unless they pull the trigger on something before he talks
to him. Stefanski knocked him out with his interview yesterday.
Well, I can give you guys the latest on that.
Hey!
He's scheduled to get on Jimmy Haslam's plane in 53 minutes.
Okay.
So, to fly to Cleveland. And what I would tell you guys about that is it's going to have to, like, he's going to have the right situation there to go. He's got to win the interview, right? But on the flip side, I think there's this understanding that if it's going to be the current structure, right, and they say, we're just going to drop our coach in and have Paul DePodesta helping run the organization from San Diego, and then we're going to pick a GM, and you just go coach. Like, that's not going to work, right?
Why?
Because he...
What's his option?
Because look at what happened there in 2016 and 17, right?
Yeah.
Okay, like, look at what happened there. Like, if you had one more shot at being a head coach, right, would you go to a place where it was like, okay, we're going to have this guy out in San Diego, and the owner's constantly talking to him, right? And then we're going to have a general manager, and he's got a line to the owner, too, and maybe you don't know him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be five other consultants. That's the problem in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that, like I think Josh has come to the realization that there isn't a perfect job out there. These jobs wouldn't be open if they were perfect, right?
Right, right.
In most cases.
But there's
like, you have your Pittsburgh every so often.
There's higher qualified candidates, though, that have interviewed for that job that would take it.
So here's what I'm saying about, here's what I would tell you about, like, the what most people, and the reason why, like, Matt Rhule, for example, who just took the Panthers job, would not take the interview there, is because there is a belief in football that the problem there is systemic, and that the owner there listens to too many people, right? So that organization forever has been set up in silos, and there are 15 different people that the owner talks to, and he's the king of the last person he talked to, and they've had all these arranged marriages where they throw this coach together with this GM. And that is a systemic problem. And and there are a lot of coaches, Matt Rhule is one of them, mm-hmm. who believe you cannot win that way. Like, if the coach's authority is constantly being undercut because the owner's always talking to somebody else, mm-hmm. then that is going to give the coach zero chance to win.
So are they willing to adapt to what Josh McDaniels wants?
And so I don't – and this was never about power for Josh. Like, this wasn't about power in Indianapolis over personnel. What this was about was, like, and again, I think I said this to you guys before, strength and conditioning, training. Like, who's my general manager? Is he competent? Like, it was about...
Why'd he take the job?
In Indianapolis, he loved the GM because they hadn't hashed out that stuff. And that was sort of the issue.
Why'd he take the job?
In Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Because he loved Chris Ballard.
Okay, so why did he leave?
He left because there were issues with strength and conditioning.
Why doesn't it happen more often?
Why doesn't that happen more often?
Yeah, that people just take jobs and then leave.
Because usually a lot of money is flashed in your face.
Usually. And a lot of money was flashed in his face here. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, on it, quite honestly, like, good job by the Crafts. The Crafts sent some insecurity and swooped in. You know? Yeah. And I think that was a huge
part. He was a real humdinger of an offensive coordinator.
But what I tell you... is that coach, like, Matt...
Well, since then, they won
Matt
a Super
Rhule's
Bowl.
A, I mean,
doesn't matter.
Okay,
it doesn't
so,
mean because
so take
of him.
Matt, like, well, we'll use the Matt Rhule example again.
Tom Brady is a quarterback.
We'll use the Matt Rhule example again here. The Giants, right? He's from New York. He used to work in that organization. They have a young quarterback. Why didn't Matt Rhule wait and interview with the Giants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Matt Rhule worked there before. And you know what Matt Rhule realized? If I go to the Giants, there's a crap load of stuff that I'm not going to be able to control.
Yeah.
Like, he gave the Giants a list of things. Matt Rhule gave the Giants a list of things. Like, here's what I think you need to do to change your organization if it's going to work. And the Giants were okay with a lot of that stuff. But then he goes to Carolina, and the owner says to him, you know what? We're going to set up medical the way you want it. We're going to set up strength and conditioning the way you want it.
We're going to give you $70 million
We're going to hire your strength coach.
Yeah.
Like, it was a blank slate. It was like, because he came from a place where he had all that power.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you a blank slate and let you run the program the way you want. Notice, like, he inherited a general manager, but all that other stuff actually matters a lot.
Okay, why did the Giants completely bypass Josh McDaniels to take the special teams coach? No, that's my question. Okay.
Because Belichick there's a couple reasons why. So on Sunday or on Monday night, Matt Rhule's people were able to leverage the Giants against the Panthers. They get this gigantic Godfather offer from the Panthers. Like, boom, gone. He's off the market. The Giants' number one candidate comes off the market. Now, all of a sudden, the Giants are sitting there, and they've got to make a decision. Do we hire Joe Judge, or do we wait and, like, complete the process, right? Now, a lot of people say, well, why couldn't you wait? Why couldn't you just go through the process? Mississippi State had an offer on the table to Joe Judge. At that point, Bill Belichick called the Maras and gave a glowing recommendation to Joe Judge. My understanding is that helped push that over the goal line. The Maras, who were blown away in the interview, said, well, we really like this guy, and if we don't hire him now, then we're going to lose him because he's going to go to Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hired – so the Giants had to make a decision. It was either –
Now, Leach is at Michigan.
But it was either Joe Judge – like, for the Giants at that point, it's either Joe Judge or the field.
Okay, no. Well, then real quick, I do want to know this. are the Cleveland Browns willing to give Josh McDaniels what he wants?
Like, he's going to find out today.
Well,
he's,
finally, after all of these years of losing, do you think?
The fact that they waited for him and they still did not
wait
for him.
They didn't wait for him.
I respect.
They have all. They have 6 months to find a coach.
But here's the, like, I respect about what Josh is doing, what I think he's going to do. Like, what I respect about it is you go in and you say, listen, this is how I think you win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to run your program this way, sign me up. I think the only reason, like, that Josh looks at this different than someone like Matt Rhule does, where you see all the systemic issues, the issues with the owner and everything else, this job's a calling for him. Like, going back home to Cleveland is the same as Bill Cowher going home to Pittsburgh.
And
right?
He loves Baker Mayfield.
Yep, and this job and fixing that place.
What are the chances he gets the job?
I think if Jimmy Haslam is willing to meet his conditions, which I don't think include personnel control, by the way. I think, again, it's all that other stuff. And then it's like hiring Dave Ziegler.
So he gets the job. He's the leading candidate.
He is not. Like, if he...
Because I don't think he is.
If Jimmy Haslam meets Josh's conditions, I don't think Josh comes back here without the job.
Okay.
Like, I don't think Josh has the job.
I disagree. I think that they're in no rush to find anyone in that. I think Bienemy...
Nor do they need to be. They're the only vacancy all the time.
Because here's the thing. Josh is... Like, I think say all this happens today, right? Like, okay, here's what I need. And I think it's going to be like sort of a back and forth sort of interview because they have interviewed him before. And they really liked him in 2014. At that point, I think that the Jimmy Haslam, J.W. Johnson, Chris Cooper, and Paul DePodesta, like, that group is going to have to make a decision. It's, do we go forward with what we've been doing or do we start over with this? And one way or the other, they're going to have to make a decision on one or the other. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, like, you know, I think there's a chance, like, 5-6 o'clock tonight. There's a chance 5-6 o'clock tonight that Josh McDaniels is the coach of the Cleveland Browns. I think there's a chance at 1 or 2 o'clock today, Josh McDaniels is pulling his name out. Like, I think either's on the table.
Well, he's done an incredible amount of damage to his reputation.
Not if he gets the job.
Yes, Rich, he has, because there's people that he has been scheduled to interview with that have hired coaches out from under him.
Put it this way. If Cleveland wasn't an option this year, and this, you know, there are obvious ties, as Bert has detailed, would he have gotten a sniff at anything?
No.
Well, I mean, he had interviews lined up with the Giants.
Yeah, and they took coaches.
Wouldn't even let him in the door before they went and hired
him. The Panther, he was... I'll just tell you that it was 1-1A with him and Rhule with the
fire. And they didn't interview him.
And the Panthers had to make a decision.
Yeah, and they didn't interview
again. Like, I think,
well, they interviewed Rhule first.
I mean,
Rich, because they hired the special teams coach.
I'll say
from
this,
the Patriots without interviewing him.
But you asked if the reputation was ruined.
His reputation has been ruined.
The thing about the Giants, real quick,
if Rhule takes the Giants job, I think there's a very good chance that Josh is the Panthers.
Real quick, though, about the Giants. You said the Giants took Joe Judge, A, because Mississippi State was there, but B, because Belichick gave them a glowing review. Would he have given them a glowing review for McDaniels as well?
I mean,
that was kind of an awkward pause.
I think he would. But, like, you know, the urgency, like, Joe Judge had leverage because he had an offer.
I think that Belichick believes that Joe Judge is going to be a better head coach than McDaniels, and I think he said as much in that he believes that special teams coaches
we heard all about that on Monday.
Well, yes. Listen, you know, talk to John Harbaugh. All right, we will be right back. Five to Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB joining us. Now, when it comes to Tom Brady, everyone knows that there is a lot of conversation. Now, Tom Curran came out with something that said that that Brady not only would not be able to get what he would get from other teams, but he would have to take a massive discount. to stay with the Patriots. Now, is that what you're hearing? Is that something that's a reality?
I think he'd have to take less. I think the Patriots are going to have to thread the needle here because I don't think, and you know, my understanding of it going back to like last summer was it wasn't so much about the money, like the raw dollars, as it was about the years.
Okay.
And I think Brady wanted like some level of assurance. Okay, like I'm going to be here. I'm going to be the starting quarterback here for the next 3 years. Now, it's impossible to put that in writing and say, you know, you're the guy. But like, I think, you know, you can show that to a guy by putting a contract in front of him that implicitly says that. Okay. And I think the fact that they weren't willing to do that, and then you heard the phrasing that came, like uncharted territory, bothered him. And like, look, like I know, what's that weird noise, Fred? Is that your text noise?
Yeah.
It sounds like a kazoo or something.
I'm texting one of my my sources.
It just sounds like a kazoo or something. I don't know. It's weird.
Texting one of my many NFL sources.
I don't even know what a kazoo is. So anyway, like I think it's like with Brady, I think as much as anything else, this is about making a commitment to him and saying, you're going to be our starting quarterback going forward. And logically, to me and you, it makes sense to say, well, you are in uncharted territory. There is no telling what you're going to look like at 44 or 45 years old. But if you're that guy, right, like, and say you put yourself in Tom Brady's shoes last July and August, and you've given 19 years to the organization, you've won more than less, you've covered up holes they've had, you've taken less money, you've, but like, tangibly added value to the franchise, right? Like, they're the second most valuable franchise in the NFL. Why?
Right.
Largely because of him, right?
Right?
You've done all of that. And then they say to you, you know, we don't know what it's going to look like in a year or two, so we'd like to go year to year with, like how are you going to react to that?
Right.
Of course you're going to be pissed. Like, of course, like, and I don't think enough people look at it that way. It's like, there's like, this is a human being. Like, this isn't like a...
No, I completely understand why he's pissed. Okay, but is it? But you're saying it's not a money situation, though.
I don't think in the summer it was money.
No. Now
I think it's respect now,
which means money.
Which means money. Which that's how you show. That's now. How you show now. Respect.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So if they put something in front of him.
Yeah. Back
like,
to my point, though, is it? Can the Patriots give him enough money to show him the respect that he believes he deserves?
So what's the like the comp, I guess, would be the Breeze contract,
yeah, it
right?
would be like 30 million a year.
And Breeze got 25 a year. We'll see what the Saints give him if he's even going to come back next year. But, you know, whatever Breeze would get, I think would probably be the comp. And maybe Breeze gets done a little earlier if Breeze makes a decision. Breeze is not playing anywhere but New Orleans.
Right.
So, like, at the very least, they're going to get started on that as soon as he decides.
Sure.
And they're like, hey, let's find a middle ground, right?
Because that's uniquely, just because of the size of the city of New Orleans and what he's meant to that city, it's like a unique situation.
I mean, he was like with Katrina and everything else, all of that, you know? So, and he already made top dollar, too. Like, he was at the top of the market for a while, so... Like, I think that they'll probably, like, they'll say, like, okay, like, where can we find a middle ground that makes sense? And then whatever Breeze gets, I think you're sort of negotiating off of that. Philip Rivers is going to be another comp. And if the Chargers franchise him, which had been their plan, and maybe they'll, if they think Brady's a possibility, maybe they would pull the rug out from underneath that one. But if they franchise him, that number is $27 million. So you would think it would be somewhere in the $25 to $30 million range.
Okay. No, but the thing is, can the Patriots do that? Could they afford to give him?
They have what, 57 under the cap or 55,
and
whatever
like
it is. Can they really blow that up to sign a guy who they may or may not want? That's going to be 43 next summer.
And there's like 13. There's 13 in dead money that goes along with them, which I know Curran pointed out. It's a good question because Tooney's up because
not
going to
do you any good
up.
If you subtract your best offensive lineman.
Yeah, so
here's the other issue.
Okay, go ahead.
The age of the roster is the other issue.
Yeah, they're very old, and they played a lot of football, and I think that showed at the end
so
of the year.
So I'll go down the list. Julian Edelman, this is right now, not next year.
Yeah, 33.
Julian Edelman, 33. Devin McCourty, 32. Jason McCourty, 32. Patrick Chung, 32. Marcus Cannon, 31. Mohamed Sanu, 30. Stephon Gilmore, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, Lawrence Guy, Jamie Collins, John Simon, and Rex Burkhead are all 29. So all of those guys are either 30 or going to be 30 very soon. And to have that many key players of that age Like, that's ancient by NFL standards.
Sure, and you could see at the end of the season that they started running out of steam, especially with all the football they played.
So, like, if you're like, wouldn't your decision if you're the Patriots be colored by what you do with all those guys?
Yes, and so that's so. My question is, okay, so we've come to the terms with if they signed Brady, it would be very prohibitive to expanding the roster. So, my thought has always been that Belichick wants to see the future and would not want Brady back based on the amount of money he wants, but the Krafts might get very emotional at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you see things
happening?
That's
a fair way to look at it. Yeah. I mean, like, I also think, but again, like, I think like that group of players, right? And I think I sat here with you guys last year and we talked about the cap situation going into this year.
Right.
And God, like, I remember like it looked like, and we talked about November and December and January, and it looked like they're going to have to do something. Well, then, and that was when they didn't look like they were very good. Then they turn the corner, they get it together, they win the Super Bowl. Maybe this was the bonus year, right? Like, maybe this was the, like, all right, like, we'll keep it. We won the Super Bowl. We'll keep it together for one more year.
Right.
Like, maybe this was the extra year. And if this was the extra year, you wonder if Bill's thinking to himself, well, we have to do it now.
Yeah.
Right? We have to blow this thing up.
I would
now.
Imagine that he would, right?
And like, logically, if this wasn't, take the quarterback out of it. I know that's hard to do.
Right.
But if you take the quarterback out of it, this logically would be a time for them. I mean, this is where they were in 2009.
Still
right?
A weak division. It's still a weak division. You could still win the division.
Right.
Can you do that? Are the Patriots prepared to go forward with Jarrett Stidham as the starting quarterback, or are they bringing in a veteran to start over him while Stidham takes another year or two?
I think that's the crux of it, Wallach, is that, like, if you keep all of these guys together, or you keep 80% of those guys that I just named together, you're not going to have a better option than Tom Brady. There's no veteran you're going to plug in that can run your system like Brady can. If you're blowing it up, we're talking about something else.
Then you keep Stidham, and then you draft a quarterback, and then you keep drafting quarterbacks until
you find one, right? Okay.
Which is what what Seattle did after they had thrown a bunch of money at Flynn, and they ended up with Russell.
Well,
Wilson.
Yeah, I mean they try like the that's how Seattle. Like, everybody thinks you got to draft one high. Seattle, like, they inherited Matt Hasselbeck. They traded for Charlie Whitehurst. They brought in Tavares Jackson. Like they kept pulling levers. That was a thing. And then eventually they landed on Russell Wilson.
Well, and that's what I think you have to do in the NFL is that, I mean, you don't have to use a first round pick on a guy, but you got to take quarterbacks.
You guys just keep throwing darts.
Yep. You got to just keep doing it. And that's the way that these teams get their guys.
And then eventually, if you get it right, no one's going to like. Does anybody remember that the Eagles went and signed Chase Daniel the offseason that they got Carson Wentz?
Yeah, because they got Carson Wentz. Because they were smart enough to go, all right, well, we signed Chase Daniel, but we like Carson Wentz. Yeah,
like they brought back Sam Bradford, they signed Chase Daniel, they spent all this money on quarterbacks, then it's like, well, we love this guy out of North Dakota State, so screw it, let's go trade up and get him, and no one remembers the rest of it.
And that's exactly what good teams do, is that they stockpile quarterbacks until one hits. All right, so we will continue with Bird. I'm interested in your feelings of just how limited Brady was by the weapons around him. That's been a narrative that's been floating around that I'm not positive about. We'll talk in just a matter of moments. Here are the headlines.
Kutcher and Rich.
.985 The Sports Hub, Burt Breer from MMQB working the phones, talking to coaching candidates as we speak. I've just been spying on my house and texting my wife and children, letting them know I can, because now I got the pimp security system.
That's right. See, I only put the ring situation on the outside of my house.
I have
all the cameras on the inside.
I have an outside, inside. I have a half a pit bull. I got my thing. I got other stuff, too, I don't want to talk about.
Oh, that's a bedroom thing. I understand.
Listen, you got to make some decisions.
Tell Josh we said hello.
He doesn't want you to know who he's talking to.
Oh, I don't know who he's talking to.
He's talking to, he might be talking to Captain Puskator over there. All right. Well, listen. Okay. A narrative that's been going on, Burt, that I think I'm the only one that doesn't agree with, is that Tom Brady was a victim of a lack of weapons.
Yeah.
Now, what I counter with is, well, the Patriots used a lot of draft capital on skill position players. They used a second pick on Mohamed Sanu. They used a first-round pick on Henry. They used a first-round pick on Sony Michel. They have Philip Dorsett, who has succeeded in other systems. And obviously, they have Julian Edelman. That, to me, they have Rex Burkhead, who's a quality, you know, filling back. They have James White, who's a very good third down back. Now, I don't think another player other than Tom Brady, another quarterback, gets a break on that. Cause
what do you mean? Like
everyone's going like, well, it's not his fault. He didn't have anyone to throw to, or he didn't have anyone. And I disagree with that completely. Do you think that he was a victim of a lack of offensive talent? Because the line played well at the end of the year.
No, I think he's like, look, there was a point in his career where I feel like it almost didn't matter what you put around him.
Right.
Like there was this, and like to me, the golden example of that was 2006.
Sure.
When you guys remember, I mean, you guys remember
that. Shea Caldwell. Yep.
I mean, like that was,
that Troy Brown playing receiver.
Well, Troy
that
Brown was like
Troy Brown like
35.
His last like that was that was like the remains
and
of Troy
still,
Brown.
And they still should have gone to the Super Bowl that year.
And they were, I mean, like if they hadn't run out of gas at the very end,
they had the flu. That was the excuse that year.
Yeah, and you guys remember, like they and they like their plans kind of blew up because they let David Givens go in free agency with the idea we're going to sign Deion Branch. And then what happened?
Deion held out, and they traded him.
Deion held out, they traded him, and that was the summer. Brady, I believe he talked to Mike Silver, who was a Sports Illustrated at the time.
Okay.
And Mike Silver, like, there was some sort of comment he made about, I took less because they told me they were going to put all this talent around me, and now they're using my contract against everyone else.
Right.
So instead of it being like, we're going to pay everybody so we can keep the band together, it was, Tom took less. Why aren't you taking less?
Right.
Right? Like, so that got back to Tom, and he was really upset about it. But that year in 06, they lost Branch. They lost Givens. The two young tight ends, Graham and Watson, hadn't really become what they thought they were going to become.
Both first-round picks, by the way.
Corey Dillon was a disaster.
Graham? What's that?
Like, I'll tell you what. The moment I knew Corey Dillon was done, like, I was covering the team back then. You guys remember that?
Yes.
Like, I there was this one week where I realized, like, 3 days in a row, he'd walked into the locker room at, like, 11:30 a.m. with a big bag of McDonald's under his arm. I was like, I don't know why. There's this one week where I put one. Because, you know, back then, I don't think, like, the TB12 method may not have been as...
Right.
Like, so, like you just, like, every so often you see somebody bring something unhealthy in the locker room. Just normal, you know? And then I just, for one reason or another, this one week, I just noticed, like, Corey Dillon had McDonald's 3 days in a row and had, like, no problem just walking into the locker room with it. I'm like, all right.
That was 2 years after.
Like, that's why his yards per carry is, like, at 3.3 right
now. Right. He'd run for, like, 1,800 yards when they won in 04. He was the reason they were able to do it.
He was a hammer that year.
Oh, yeah. And then 2 years later, it was like, I got my ring. That's it.
Yeah,
I'm done.
So we're, like, look, the point is, like, there was a point in his career where he was – freaking like able to like he was like a he was your margin for error,
right?
He was like able to, if you have a little less at left guard, if you have a little less at tight end, if you have a little less at receiver, and we've seen that over and over again, he was able to make it work with less around him. And I don't like, I think now he's at like sort of, and I brought this example up before, like John Elway with Mike Shanahan, where like John Elway in the 80s. You guys remember those teams in the
80s? Yeah, they had no defense.
There was no one.
He
carried those teams to the Super Bowl. By the end, in 1997, he wasn't capable of doing that.
They needed Terrell Davis.
But they had Terrell Davis. They had Ed McCaffrey. They had Rod Smith.
To that point.
So I think Brady's at that point of his career where you have to be better around him.
Don't you put – okay, if there was a younger quarterback, a good young quarterback, say Russell Wilson – was the quarterback of the Patriots, do you think he would have been able to utilize those weapons better?
Right now, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, look what Russell Wilson's doing. Like, that's like, the reason why Russell Wilson, when he was young, because he was making nothing, mm-hmm. they were able to put this incredible team around him, right?
Yeah.
And you remember, like, even this, like, how loaded they were, they still went out and signed Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill and traded for Percy Harvin.
Yeah.
And they were able to do all these things. He's making $35 million. They can't do that anymore. But you know what? Like, he's able to kind of get them past where they lost their left tackle the last week of the season. They lost both their running backs. They're bringing in Marshawn Lynch.
But and beyond that, don't you think he would throw to a N'Keal Harry? Don't you think he could make it work with younger receivers?
And that's the thing is, like, Russell Wilson has done that with DK Metcalf, right?
Yeah.
Like, DK Metcalf, who can probably run three routes, like, and is an incredible athlete, but, like, he's not exactly Jerry Rice out there.
Okay, well, if he can't do that, then the one theory that I've been hearing is that the Patriots might want to try to, if they bring him back, obviously Brady is going to want to have some sort of weapons around him, and I don't think Belichick would be cool on doing it unless there was some sort of plan that showed that this was going to be different than next year and they were able to get some decent receivers, tight ends.
They have
what's
them.
Out? What they don't?
They do.
They
Bert
don't.
And
work
I
with
just
Brady.
Talked about
but,
it.
But listen, they don't work with Brady.
Okay,
whatever
fine.
They
then Brady's
agree
the
that
problem.
The personnel. Okay, maybe, but
then
you,
then first okay, of all, if Brady
would
signs
it have been
that,
a problem if Antonio Brown without his shenanigans, if the talent of
well,
Antonio
yeah,
Brown,
if you
was
gave
here,
him the best receiver in football,
that's what I'm
yeah,
saying.
Well,
they
Rich,
obviously
they
need an upgrade
get,
for Tom Brady.
They
to
cannot
work.
Get. That's my problem. Antonio Brown. Rob Gronkowski, these all-world talents.
Fred, what
no.
I'm trying to say is that if
no,
Tom
I'm
Brady's
trying
going
to, say
to stay,
that
they
if
need
you brought,
an upgrade on
well,
talent.
Well, they can't because they won't have
them.
The money.
Well, that's my question.
Well, I just told you the answer.
Here's
you jumped into the middle of a conversation.
But this is...
jumped into the middle of the conversation. My conversation with Bert is that I don't believe that there was that much of a lack of talent around Brady, and I believe that other quarterbacks in the league could have made it work with that
yes,
talent.
And
so
the
here's the part
to
here's
that
the, here's
is,
the part
can
no, we're
they
talking
the,
about it
but here's
now.
The part, here's the part of it. That Here's that the part of it that I think sometimes like people miss, right? Why can't you use young receivers here?
Because he won't throw to them.
It's the system, right?
It's the system.
It's the system.
It's the system, okay? So the system is incredibly complex, right? So say his skills are declining a little bit, right? What makes up for it? His mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, look at the receivers who are around Peyton Manning at the end. How is Peyton Manning? Like, Peyton Manning was throwing, like I could have thrown like Peyton Manning was throwing at the end, right? At the very end of his career, how is he able to make up for it? He made up for it because they were running an incredibly complex system that was difficult for other defenses, for other teams to deal with. And they were able to run that because they had a ton of experienced guys around them. They had Emmanuel Sanders. They had Demaryius Thomas. They had Wes Welker. They had a ton of experienced guys around them. And so I think part of the equation here that sometimes people miss, and I think it is to some degree on the Patriots for not dumbing down things for the young guys. Sort of the catch-22 here becomes, though, Brady, like the like what Brady still has. Like, and I don't think he's lost that much physically, but what he still has is the mental advantage over everybody. So to leverage that advantage, you've got to be more complex offensively. If you choose to be more complex offensively, it's going to be harder to assimilate young players.
Can they bring in guys who are on the same level as Tom Brady? That's all really hard.
Yeah.
Like, can they do that? Like, do they have the means? Are they able to make, are there people available
you know
that they'll be able to have enough money
and you know
to get?
You know what's prevented them from doing it the last few years? Is this glass ceiling they've created for salaries with Gronk and Edelman. Why couldn't they go get Adam Humphries? Well, it's going to be hard for us to go talk to, it's going to be hard for us to go back to Julian Edelman with this, and it's going to be hard for us to go back to Rob Gronkowski with this and explain to them why we're paying Adam Humphries $11 million a year, right? Like, so I think that that's part of it, too, is that they've set this, like, stringent salary. There's the glass ceiling for salaries there that was once, that was created, like, for Brady first, right? Because it was, we can't pay anybody more than Brady. And then it's like kind of created by some of the other players
okay,
in the roster.
The ceiling's there. Can they do it next year? Because that's all that matters right now. Is Brady's not going to want to come back unless he believes there's players out
but
there
will
that
N'Keal
are on the same
Harry
level.
Be better with an extra
John,
year
John,
in the system?
Stop, stop.
The same
that's
thing?
Not what I'm talking about. He is not going to come back if it's the same personnel. He's just not going to do it. Because he saw what happened. And I don't care if these guys are supposed to be good. They're not working right yeah. now with Tom Brady. So can they, is there an ability for this team to be able to bring in players that Brady believes are on the same level as him?
So I'm like some of the names out there. A.J. Green, Emmanuel Sanders.
Bust it up.
Again, you're not like, we're not Austin Hooper. We're not talking about, like, most of these guys aren't young, right? So, I mean, Robbie Anderson's a knucklehead. I don't think you'd bring him in.
Are there trades that can be made?
No, Larry Fitzgerald's a free agent.
That'd be funny.
Fitzgerald's coming for sure.
Space Cowboys.
Bill's been waiting for that one for like 5 years.
He'll pull Charlie Holt in the training camp saying, nope, no thanks.
No, they'll have to pry that uniform off of him. Yeah, he ain't coming here. So, but if they, okay, to Rich's point, if they sign Brady for the kind of money that he wants, which they're not going to do, but if they do, would there be money left over to pick up veteran receivers?
Or not even just money. Is there a way that they could get them through trades,
you're so between a rock and a hard place because the way you built the team forever, and like part of it, like not drafting well too, is that they've got a lot of guys in the roster now that are making like $2-4 million, and that eventually adds up.
Yeah,
like where you usually make up for it is with cheap guys that you drafted, right? Like third and fourth round picks. Well, there aren't a lot of those on their roster. There just aren't a lot of guys that are bottom of the roster guys that are saving you money on the front end. Like, and again, the other issue is the market has gone so far beyond what you are used to spending for guys at those positions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so the receiver market now is in the 20s.
Yeah, we looked at Edelman's contract, and I know he had guaranteed money, but his like base salary is like $2 million.
I mean, isn't it unbelievable?
It is unbelievable.
Like, do you think that, let me ask you guys this. Do you think in 15 years there's going to come a point where Julian Edelman is going to be like,
"Yep,
I should have freaking left." After that second championship, I should have just pulled up stakes.
Absolutely,
yes,
because he's going to be he's going to have a lot of physical problems, and he's going to go, "I did all this, and here I am."
Look at Welker,
and he's going to have to work.
I'm just going
to
say that. Look at Welker at the end of his career; it's exactly the same.
Edelman's going to have to work. Like Edelman's going to have to get a job. Like Edelman's not going to be able to just rest on that money. I mean, he's in his early 30s.
I mean, look what Danny Amendola did. Danny Amendola eventually said, screw this, stop it. They were asking him to take a pay cut every year. He said, screw this. He went and got like $9 million from the Dolphins. What a lot of these guys don't realize is that the money, you're not going to be making that money in your next career.
Right.
Like, there's not going to be someone sitting there waiting to give you. Gronk came to that realization. I think that's part of the reason Gronk came back the last year is he recognized, like, holy crap, like it's hard to make $10 million. Yeah. Like there isn't just somebody waiting for me on the other side with a $10 million check.
And when you get $8 million guaranteed and you take all the money out of it, what you actually end up with, and I mean, he's going to have to work. He's going to get a job.
Edelman? This last contract was a good one.
Yeah, but he's still going to have to work. He's only 33 years old. I mean,
look at Bruschi. Bruschi's an example of it.
Yep.
Well, I think also these guys like to do that.
Bruschi has to work, right? Teddy's really good at what he does, but like part of the price of staying here for a guy like that was like,
Edelman's made like what, maybe like $15 million?
Yeah, he's going to have to work.
That's a lot of money.
He's going to have to work. He's 33 years old, and he's plowed through with the agent fees and the lawyers and everything else.
I'll pull up his career earnings. Hold on.
Like $30 million total.
That's awesome. Edelman. He doesn't have to work.
Yeah, he does.
It depends on what he's done with his money, really.
Put it into skateboards and sweet JE11 swag.
I think those pop ups might not have
got this rad scooter.
Listen, you got this cool JE11 super scooter. You can do sweet jumps off your sewer with a piece of plywood.
That's right. I wonder. He put a lot of money into that skate thing.
Yeah, $30 million, even with agent fees, good.
Well, you get 3% agent fees because for some reason they're capped at 3%, and then you get all the other crap that you got to deal with. Half for taxes, so you're looking at probably about, he's got $13 million. And if he wants to have any kind of lifestyle that he at once enjoyed, $13 million, he's 33 years old. I mean, he's going to have to work. He could live a normal life and have a good time and
but I think that's the realization. Like I think Amendola is the example of it. Amendola like came to the realization, like,
dude, I gotta get paid.
I don't have many years left.
And like, he also did them one favor. Like he did him a solid, and after the first solid, it's like, I can't do this again, man.
Right.
Now it's time to get paid.
Yeah. Because now I just want to win with Detroit. It's like I gotta go to Detroit and win. All right. Well, it's fast. Thank God for this Brady thing. Ideally, Brady goes somewhere else, and then the Patriots play him. That would be the thing. But I do think there's a good chance the Krafts get emotional and bring him back. If the Krafts did...
The Chargers thing is interesting.
Yeah, because I would go there if I was him.
Patriots play the Chargers this year, so
I'd go to the Titans, man.
I go to the Chargers.
That's perfect.
I go to the Chargers.
It's plug and play.
And I think like he would be somewhat close to New York, like where his kid is. Like, yep. I think that part of it is...
Him and Vrabel together and that awesome running game, so the loads...
Got some receivers you can throw to.
And on top of that, like he's probably away from the Boston media, which I don't think really ever bothered him that much.
The Chargers, though, first of all,
I think Giselle could probably like
tell
Nashville.
Me that's not Nashville. Like kind of a chic place to live.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, like it's like that. That's very much that's sort of the place.
When
to
you're
live
that
now.
Rich, being close to New York is not an issue. And second of all,
I don't think that's irrelevant.
I do because you're
being close to his son.
I understand that, but it's private plane money.
It's different than like living in Nashville and living in LA are two different things when it comes to that. Like you can get on Players Day off. Mm-hmm. You can get home from Nashville, right?
Yeah,
like that's easy. Going from L.A. and back and forth from L.A. on like when you have one day off a week can be a little bit more.
I don't know. Give me a private plane. No problem with that. I'll go wherever
Sign
you need
Fred
me.
Sign Fred up.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Because I got Edelman money, and I can't keep
I guess at the end of Edelman's contract, he's going to have made $46 million. Dude, that's plenty. Just cut it.
When's the contract up?
What's he got? 2 more years? Is that right?
I think it's 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So $46 million is going to be his lifetime. And so even if you cut that in half, I mean, dude, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
$23 million.
It's a lot of money. He's still going to have to work.
Yeah. I mean, Amendola the last 2 years has made $10.5 million.
Yeah. As I said, this last contract was a good contract.
If he wants to live a lifestyle, he's still going to have to work.
So,
all right.
So he made Amendola made the last 2 years. More than he made, way more than he made the previous four in New England.
Totally. Yeah, he was smart. Cashed in.
Plus, they've wasted all that money on those dumb videos that they make. All right. Well, Bert Breer, continue texting would-be coaches. And we appreciate it. We'll have you on next week when we come back. One of the all-time great armpits of America.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.